Andy, do me a favor. Would you please help him redeem himself by telling a real sex story?
Yes.
I don't. You know what? I'm a gentleman, and I don't. I don't kiss and tell.
Fuck it. I raise you. Nastiest shit you've ever done. I'm talking about nasty.
Wow. So many stories are running through my head right now. I dated this girl for a while, and she was really a nasty freak. She just loved to get down with sex all the time. She was like, any time of day, she was like, yeah, let's go. I'm so nasty. And I'd be nailing her.
Oh, shit.
She'd be like, oh, you're nailing me. Cool.
She talked dirty to you?
Oh, she loved to dirty talk. Totally into it. She'd be like, yeah, let's screw. I want to fuck. So dirty. She'd be like, oh, me so horny. Me love you long time.
So what was the titties like, bro?
Yeah, describe her.
Oh, yeah, she had great tits.
Oh, no. But I mean, like, detail, though. Does she have, like, you know, them little pink teeny nipples?
Oh, yeah.
Or like the long National Geographic nipples?
Long.
You have, like, the bumpy Braille nipples, the Stevie Wonders?
Yeah, they were nice. You know, when, like, you grab a woman's breast and it's... And you feel it, and it feels like a bag of sand when you're touching it.
Bag of sand.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Okay.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Hey, how you doing? I think I'm here. Are you there, Elvis? Hello?
I'm here. Are you there?
We're both here.
Wow.
Amazing. Thank you. And F you for not only making me do the show by myself last week, but also for coming back and not making me do it again this week.
Oh, you enjoyed it that much?
I did not.
I'll just click close right here on my Skype.
No. You misinterpret me. I said F you for making me do the show by myself last week. And thank you for coming back so I don't have to do it again.
You said F me for coming back.
No. No, it's a reverse of that. No, I did not care for talking to myself for an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, I used to do it all the time on the Drunken Soliloquy.
Well, you
I love talking to myself.
I hate it. I hate hearing my own voice for that long. But, I mean, I certainly don't mind hearing my voice for 6 to 15 second bursts. But anything shy of that, I go... It actually starts to become nausea inducing.
Right.
I start to get nauseous and I want to.
I didn't listen to your solo effort because I didn't want to feel sorry for you.
Dicks.
I had a birthday party to go to, and the funny thing, right when I got back, I got back at like 9:10. So I got out my BlackBerry and I was ready to text you when I saw you, and I just happened to check my tweet deck and there was this tweet about you asking what's this fuck to do it, who obviously bailed on you as well. So I was like, well, fuck him then, because it was only like 9:10. I had an emergency birthday party.
No, he didn't. Like, first of all, he didn't bail on me. What I had to do is you announced that you had this birthday party you had to go to, and that's fine.
Which I literally didn't know about until that morning. It was like, you've got this birthday party.
because birthdays are always a surprise, aren't they? They're always a shocker.
In my family, yes. Don't even get me started. Literally, in my family, it's, hey, we're having a birthday party.
Okay.
Yes. Not for, yes. It's this, yeah. Trust me. That's how things happen in this family.
And secondly, what's his fuck? Who would be Chez Pazienza. He didn't
Chez, what's his fuck?
Yeah, he didn't bail on me. Skype was screwing with us last week. It was, in fact, far worse than auto-tuning or anything else we've experienced on the show before. And so what was happening is make this loud, obnoxious noise, and I'm not going to try to duplicate.
But poor carpenter who blames his tools, my friend.
Well, it was Skype. I mean, what can I say?
Mm-hmm.
So, should I blame you for the auto-tuning?
Sure, it was me, actually. I was under your desk jostling your cables.
No, I mean, when your voice auto-tunes,
yeah.
Who do we blame?
Oh, well, that's neither here nor there. I was ready to roll last week, but I was
Hello? He just disconnected. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. We just lost. Call dropped. You know, Skype is eavesdropping and is really deliberately just trying to screw with us. I'm convinced that that's what's happening. I'm going to try to ring him back here using my Skype device here and see if I can actually. It's not working. Skype is, It's once again, it's another week where Skype is just going to screw with us. It's probably a good thing because I felt spat coming on. Here. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Hello.
Motherfuck.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It was just like right in the middle of us talking about how shitty Skype was and then each of us blaming the other person for the technical problems, even though it's neither of our faults. Skype just disconnects. And that's exactly what was happening last week. I started out with Chez. We would talk about it. And just as soon as I would say, yeah, we've been struggling with Skype for the last half hour, suddenly we start going and making weird
droid noises.
Yeah, droid, like it was making some sort of weird, like the Close Encounters aliens kind of noise. It was like loud honking sounds.
Ugh. All right, well, let's hurry while we're back up. Rush.
Unbelievable. It's the, and I was saying, it's probably good that Skype disconnected us because I was sniffing a spat coming on.
Yeah. There was a spat coming on.
And that's, you know,
I just called you Mr. Premature Ejaculate on the replacing me on a Thursday evening when it crapped out. So you're probably lucky.
Now, you said about the birthday party, hours and hours. I can't do the show, you said. I mean, you want me to read? I'll read back the transcript.
I didn't say I can't do this. I just said it just may be late. I will let you know later in the day.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go to the chat transcript here. It's the one advantage of having text is you can go back.
Mr. Anal Retentive, saving your texts.
Okay. All right. I say show today,
we
sir.
We should be doing this on the show. Are you recording?
Yeah, of course I'm recording.
So we're having this spat on the show.
Oh, of God's God, yes, we are.
Okay. Well, you go ahead and read me out for this, and then I'll tell everybody what you texted me the other day and the whole that whole conversation. Because that one's more fun than what you.
Well, So what I did is I accidentally texted you when it was I meant to text.
No, don't ruin my shitting on you. You just go ahead and shit on me, and then I'm going to shit on you. You don't get to preempt my shitting on you. You go ahead. Yeah, I got my text right here. Don't say names, but I said my niece just heard about it this morning. That's how they operate.
Yeah.
It's just one of those unplanned things. They can't do it this weekend because move, blah, blah, long story. And then you said something. My texts don't keep your replies. What did you say to that?
Well, I said, gotcha. I might have to get a sub co-host if you can't make it.
I didn't get that one. I don't have any memory of that one at all.
I said,
and then I said, I say to you, you said something. I said, yeah, probably late evening my time. Oh, no, that's this.
That's today.
That's today, that post-peanut today. Swimming, because I took peanut swimming today.
I said, show today, sir, and you said unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Work.
And then yesterday you sent me a lovely, extraordinarily gay text, which was wonderful.
Well, I did, and it wasn't intended for you. It was obviously intended for my girlfriend.
Yeah, doy.
But,
and I said, yeah. I replied back, WTF, are you drunk? Oh, no, I said, I think that may have been meant for... your girlfriend. Otherwise,
I sent you a romantic text, but it wasn't meant
and
for
it was
you.
Lovely, and I was feeling very warm and loving towards you. And then I realized there's no way you meant to send that to me.
Was this intended for me? And I said, no. You said, was this intended for your girlfriend? And I said, no, it was totally intended for you.
Then I got uncomfortable.
Is it WTF? Are you drunk? And I said, no, I'm just a doofus who can't manage the texting business. Oh, God. So anyway, I was thinking that we would, and I think we still will. There's a couple of wiener things to talk about.
Oh, God. I gotta rant about how big a crap movie Super 8 was. Can I do that?
Yeah, it was bad.
That movie sucked.
Like it. Don't spoil
that movie
it.
Sucked.
Was it? Yeah. That's too bad.
Because and here's why it sucked. This is the reason that I felt betrayed by it. Because like the first 15 minutes, I was all ready to get out the BlackBerry and start tweeting about how awesome I just knew it was gonna be. Because it's one of those rare movies that I get to go into not knowing jack crap about it. Like the previews have been very mysterious, and even the title really doesn't tell you shit about it. And I just haven't been reading anything, or I just wanted to go in cold. All I knew is that the scant previews that I had seen gave me a real kind of Close Encounters feel, right? I mean, it's the whole thing's supposed to be an homage to Steven Spielberg. And that's all it is. I mean, but it's just a great big empty homage. The first 15 minutes made me feel like, oh my God, J.J. Abrams is the best thing ever. Mm. And then the rest of it, right in the fucking toilet. So I am just very, very disappointed with this film, and I give it a big fat fucking thumbs down because it just didn't do anything. And the ending was so god awful. I won't spoil it or anything, but the ending was just a great big fuck you to the audience, basically. That pisses me off.
Mm, that's JJ terrible.
Can kiss my ass.
So the point which they're filming and there's a train wreck, and then something comes out of that train, which we're not going to spoil, but. So everything up to the something coming out of the train, was that all the good part? And then when the thing comes out of the train,
right. Then nothing made sense. Yeah, after that, it's just like, huh? Just did nothing with it. It just had this great rosy glow and like the film stock and every. I mean, he did everything, made it look and feel like a movie from our childhoods. Mm-hmm. I mean, J.J. Abrams is a peer of ours. He's about our age. He grew up, you know, he came up under the same great film era that we did, Star Wars and Close Encounters and E.T. especially. I was getting a real E.T. vibe from this movie. It's kids, you know, running around, smart mouth kids, and it just had that same look. It was amazing. The cinematography and everything else just really felt like a classic 80s Spielberg movie, and it just gave me this warm glow. And then it just didn't do anything with it. It just did nothing with it. And all the emotional stuff. I mean, I still to this day, if I watch E.T., I will cry like a fucking baby at the end of that movie. I mean, I would sob when that fucking E.T. gives Drew Barrymore a hug and all that. I'm done. I mean, that movie just destroys me. And it still holds up today. I mean, fuck that special edition with all the extras and when he replaces the guns with walkie-talkies. He kissed my ass for that. Lost a whole lot of respect for Steven Spielberg for that. Yeah. But the original, if you just watch the original, great movie, cannot ever be beaten. Kills me every time. This, at the end, there's this touchy-feely, huggy moment between the principals, and you're just like, huh? Well, where did that come from? No, it was just so tacked on. It was pitiful. Pitiful, pitiful.
But there's nothing establishing that sort of emotional tie between all these characters.
But it was the father says something to the son, and you're like, huh? Okay. What for? What did he say? Please to explain why he said that. It was like a Spielbergian ending to a movie that Spielberg had nothing to do with. It's just like, oh, we need the heartstrings now. Have the father say something, and the father goes, and the son goes, and I'm just sitting there going, boo, stupid. Like, yeah. I was so pissed off. And just trying to – you cannot crowbar a Steven Spielberg ending onto a non-Steven Spielberg script, right? I mean, or film. You just can't crowbar sentimentality into the last 30 seconds of a movie.
Yeah.
And that's what he was trying to do. It was just total crap.
Right.
So fuck you, J.J. Abrams.
So it's kind of like it was just an action movie for the second
two-thirds. No, there wasn't hardly any action at all. No.
Oh. Oh,
I mean,
really?
No. It's you don't see the thing that comes out of the train until literally the last – maybe 10 minutes of the movie.
That's awful.
All you see is, you know, it's skittering or like a shadow, or you see people seeing it, you see people screaming about it, and you see what it's up to, but you never see – and basically what it's up to is what E.T. was up to. It's basically building something. Like E.T. comes and spends his whole time building his little fucking radio to call home. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what this fucking thing is doing, building – just building something. You don't know what it is until the end. But you don't ever see the thing until right at the end.
That's awful.
And then it's just like, oh, boo, the way you see it. And it's just no. It just – no. And then – no, no, no. It just had no cohesion at all. It was all on the screen and there was nothing on the story. Like, it was the whole homage thing just took over. There was just no story there at all. That's what pissed me off. Because J.J. Abrams is usually really story-driven filmmaker. I mean, like Star Trek, it was kind of a stupid story, but it was story nonetheless. It was fun. It was action-packed. And it was great. This just didn't – none of its pieces came together to make a whole.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it really – yeah.
That's
because
a shame.
That was the movie I was looking forward to this summer.
You got to show the monster. You got to show the goddamn monster. I mean, well, I can see why now. Don't show the monster in the trailer, but show the monster in the movie. Even the – I know what he was trying to do. He was trying to do a Jaws where they wait and wait and wait to show the actual shark. But they do. I mean, you see the shark, you know, about halfway through the movie. You start to see it. You start to see the size of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole ending, you know, the whole third act, you're seeing that thing throughout.
Yeah. And the reason you didn't see so much of it in the movie to begin with in Jaws was that the fucking thing never worked.
It didn't
work. Again, it's that art from adversity thing where it was actually scarier by not seeing it as much as they wanted because the thing just never worked.
Well, that's what he's
now,
trying.
Now, CGI, I mean, it's funny that I'm complaining that you never see it because I'm a huge, you know, I hate just throwing CGI on the screen for the fucking sake of it. Like, this new Green Lantern movie just looks like ass because it's just nothing but CGI. I can't stand that. I can't stand movies without a practical something. I want it in the lens. I'm sick of CGI. I'm sick of these fucking off-world, you know, CGI where nothing but like 8/10 of what's his fit, Ryan Reynolds's head is real, right? Everything else is painted on. Fuck that. I don't want that. There's no emotion to that. There's nothing to cling to. What I always think about is Aliens, the James Cameron sequel to Alien, the second Alien movie scared the fucking crap out of me because all of that stuff was practical. Like when what's his face sticks his head up in the ceiling tiles when they're in that room, you know, and he's like, it's in the fucking room, man, it's reading right, look at that, and he sticks his head up there and those things are crawling like bugs through the ceiling. Shit myself. I was like 12. Shit myself. Because those were – I don't care if they were guys in suits. It was real. That thing could have fallen through the ceiling and crushed somebody for real.
That's it. You know, that's why I like the Guillermo del Toro movies. Hellboy movies and Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah, he does all the practical creatures where he does, does a little bit of CG, but he does a lot of guys in suits, which you know, works to me because they still exist in that space. They're still very, very real. And, you know, like with the Star Wars, the prequels, you know, the idea of having Yoda as a puppet was so much better than a CG Yoda.
But they even fucked that up. I mean, they couldn't get the puppet to look like the old Frank Oz puppet. I don't know where they got that thing. It's like, look, the dude's been alive for 800 years. There's not going to be any difference between his Anakin walking around life self and the one 20 years. 20 years doesn't add shit to a little fucking thing that's been around for 800 years. So just dig out the old puppet. What the hell? They fucked that up so bad. But the Del Toro stuff, that's a great example because that guy, first and foremost, beyond any other metric, is a writer. He is a hardcore, stone-cold writer. And all of his movies are on the page first. I mean, period. And he does – he uses CG to great advantage, like the thing – the fucking crazy thing in Pan's Labyrinth was like half – it was that guy from – the guy that played – what's his face in Hellboy was in the suit, but they like CG'd his legs. He was on these funky stilts, so they could get those freaky Pan legs, right? Those satyr legs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's cool. That's a cool use of CG. Like they did a lot of that in Narnia. They did some really. I've been indoctrinating Peanut into the Narnia cult. She's not as into it as I wish she would be. She gets kind of freaked out. Of course, I don't know if you've seen the first Narnia, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Motherfuck, that was violent. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God. There's a scene where the White Witch – and I haven't read the books in 30 years, right? But there's a scene where the White Witch, played by that fucking half-man, half-woman thing that was in that George Clooney movie. You know, Tilda Swinton. She's the White Queen. There's a scene where they sacrifice Aslan, the lion, on this big table, on this big rock. This is the whole Christianity mythos there. And I'm like, oh, my God. Even I'm, like, looking away. And Peanut's going to have fucking nightmares for years. I was like, I don't remember Narnia being this hardcore terrifying. So that was probably a bad parental move. Right along the lines of when she was five and I showed her Monty Python, the Holy Grail, and when the bunny – took the guy's head off, she was literally paralyzed with fear for like 3 days.
I thought you were going to say the ending of Braveheart. I showed Peanut the ending of Braveheart when they eviscerated him. And
bad. They didn't show that. This is a fucking bunny jumps up and bites a guy's head off. I forgot how goddamn awful that was. I mean, she lost her fucking mind. Yeah. Screamed at the top of her lungs. Just absolutely lost her mind. I'm like, whoa, I just thought I'd totally destroyed her for the rest of her life. It really literally took 3 days for her to come down off of that. That was awful. So here I am laughing, showing my teeth because this is the funniest scene in the whole movie.
So thumbs down for Super 8.
I was gonna see that this weekend just for fucking with me. Yeah. I mean, just for promising a Spielbergian thing and then just so not delivering on it. Yeah, fuck it, that movie. So now I don't really know what I'm looking forward to this summer.
Captain America. You know?
No, well, yeah, that actually looks pretty good. Have you seen the previews for that?
Yeah.
I think it looks pretty fucking good. The CG, however they did the pre-Captain America bulk up, the way they've made him look so scrawny, I don't know how they did that.
That's insane.
That's a remarkable technique.
Well, if they can feel
he just won't be moving around at all.
Yeah, I mean, with the CG, they can do everything from sort of the neck down. Once you get into the mouth area, the eyeball area, that's when they start to fall into the uncanny valley and they look like shit.
Yeah, the whole Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah. But everything else, they're great at doing. They just can't do it. You know what? They could do it if they hired the right people, but still, they're using the same technology from 10 years ago, basically, on faces of humans, and it just still doesn't look realistic. It looks awful, even though they do have precedent. The Zemeckis stuff is terrible.
Oh, it just gives me the fucking creeps.
Yeah, he just doesn't give up. He just doesn't give up with it.
Well, he's done now. That bullshit, Mars is stealing our mothers or whatever.
Yeah.
That literally shut his CG, his motion capture studio down. That movie tanked so hard that they've shut his mocap studio down. So we will never see another one of those godless Zemeckis bullshit films.
Godless Zemeckis movies. Hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show. I'm Bob. That's Elvis. We're brought to you, as we always are, by Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com.
Mm-hmm.
This was the story that I wanted to talk about most today, and it doesn't have anything to do with Wiener, though I do want to get to that. This headline caught my attention on the Huffington Post. Progressives quote-unquote break up with Obama. Now this is from Netroots Nation happening in Minneapolis.
Bubble Genius is right now.
Yeah, exactly. and you probably know where this is going. This is going to aggravate everybody listening, I assure you. President Barack Obama is decidedly, quote, not the left's boyfriend anymore, progressive supporters of gay and immigrant rights said on Thursday, rebuking the White House for breaking promises to the left while also asking them for money. Lieutenant Dan Choi, who was discharged from the military.
This guy's bugging the shit out of me.
For running foul of its anti-gay don't ask, don't tell policy, provided a visual when an Organizing for America volunteer stood up and asked him to support Obama in 2012. The man said he did not support gay marriage, civil unions he offered weekly, and Choi promised promptly ripped up an Organizing for America flyer he had been given and threw it back in the man's face.
Good one, Choi.
The four panelists, Choi, immigration reform supporter Philippe Matos, America blog writer John Aravosis, and Fire Dog Lake founder Jane Hampshire.
Of course.
Said they are planning to hold the White House's collective feet to the fire for its decisions on civil rights, whether it would hurt Obama's reelection chances or not.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Crybabies.
Here we go.
Babies.
Quote, I would probably vote for the president in the end, but I also do everything that I can to shame him, said Aravosis, who writes about gay rights issues. Quote, but I don't think they realize how damaging that is, unquote. So this is a revealing quote. Yeah. They who, meaning the Organizing for America, the Obama campaign. This is John Aravosis basically saying that I'm going to shame the president and I'm so powerful that it's actually going to work.
Uh-huh. But I'll still vote for him because I'm not a dumbass, and I know the political reality is that I'm better off with a Democrat, especially a second-term Democrat, than I would ever be with the fucking Republicans on the field right now who can't even talk about gay rights. One potential candidate whose husband has called gays barbarians and who thinks it can be prayed away and that Jesus can cure you of the gay. Good job, fucking progressive morons.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is basically the president's batting 500 when it comes to the two major gay rights issues, which is Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Defense of Marriage Act. First of all, Defense of Marriage Act can't be repealed by the president. There's nothing the president can do. It has to be the Senate. I mean, the Senate or the Congress. Congress has to make another law that repeals, you know, the Defense of Marriage Act. They have to
undo their own law.
Undo it. Yeah. Don't Ask, Don't Tell, however, was repealed.
Right.
And the president signed it. The president is batting 500. You bat 500 in baseball, you're going to the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
Okay. So I don't know what I wonder now, and I've wondered this all along, but especially now, if they're just complaining for the sake of having something to complain about. I don't know what this is. I mean, what do they expect?
Right. This president, until 2012, this guy has no more political capital left. He has shot his wad. Even, I mean, the bin Laden bump is gone. He's done. Until he's got to bunker down now and get in a box and raise some fucking money and get reelected is what he's got to do. I think from progressive on through the spectrum to the gooey, chocolatey, nougaty center, he has more than represented himself as a president that can get, you know, bullet items on his agenda done. You just got to stick with him until his second term and then, you know, shoot your fucking stupid mouth off. This is unbelievably unproductive and stupid. And it makes me hate the far, far left, the people to my left.
Yeah.
Fuck them. Mm-hmm. Whiners and crybabies and douchebags.
Well, it's just
that don't have any understanding of political practicality.
It further vindicates the idea that they're out. They're just out for attention. They've decided that they're going to court the anti-Obama left, and so they're going to do everything they have to do to court those people, regardless of reality. Because the reality is that the president has a better track record than every other president combined when it comes to gay rights. That's a fact. That is a cold, hard fact.
Right. The last liberal-leaning president we had was the one that actually gave us Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So what the fuck?
And the Defense of Marriage Act.
Yeah. So what the fuck? What do they I've never been a fan of this president's position on gay marriage. I don't believe in his heart. In a million years, I don't believe that he doesn't completely support Barack Obama, not he, president, political reality Barack Obama, that he doesn't completely 100% in his heart support super gay marriage, like literal marriage. Just like I don't believe in his heart he believes in God. I think he is a stone cold atheist, and I love him for it. I kiss him right on the mouth for it. But those are two things that the political realists can never say. I'm an atheist because my mom was, and I'm totally a mama's boy, and fuck you religious people, but I'm an atheist. He can never say that. He might say it like on the last day of his last term in 2016. Hey, bitches, atheist, ba-pow! But he can never say it now, and I don't believe he doesn't believe in gay marriage. It's just one of those awful, awful political lines he has to straddle. It pisses me off.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to not support him for it.
That's right. But I mean, again, the president is someone who understands the reality of Washington politics. He understands that, you know, it doesn't matter.
Politics.
It doesn't matter. Exactly. It doesn't matter specifically what he believes about an issue. It's all about trying to move the entire ball game closer to what he believes. Okay.
Correct.
So he has to take positions that will do that will facilitate
centrist. That's right.
Moving the
center
window
left
that way.
Position. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
because,
what it's done.
Because, and if you're a constant Sullivan reader like we both are, you can keep an eye, because this is obviously near and dear to Andrew's heart because he's gay. You keep an eye on the public opinion, and it's gradually moving our way. That's what he's got to do. He's got to it's a grudge match of football where you're just grinding out the yards, right? It's not every political issue cannot be a Hail Mary into the end zone. You got to grind those yards out with your running game,
exactly.
Over and over and over.
Yeah. That's right.
These people, like Gina Hampshire, cannot be that stupid. I mean, she just cannot be that dunderheaded about political reality. It must just be driving page hits and getting a camera pointed at you. Because there's no media sensation in being a moderate, centrist, mildly center-left anything.
Yeah.
You just got to be running around with your fucking hair on fire.
Start. Here's what they do. And this is, again, this is another illustration as to why they're just full of shit and just out trolling for traffic. What they ought to be doing is spending their time whipping up votes. Call the members of Congress. Call the members of the House of Representatives. Find the votes for a repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act. Find them. Lobby those people. Spend some money lobbying those people. Because it's those people on the Hill who are going to make a decision with regards to the Defense of Marriage Act. It's not Barack Obama.
Shame those people.
You can't host columns on your blog about, you know, the president ought to follow the rule of law and then expect him to wave a magic wand and repeal a law. You can't do that because that's not how the system works, and it makes you look like an idiot.
Well, and even if he could undo it by presidential fiat in some way and get all imperial and stroke of a pennant, that would still there's no political upside to that. That just makes him look like a tyrant.
Yeah.
It's Congress is that's my whole problem with this Libya thing. I don't see. I went and actually read the War Powers Act today. Today I read the whole fucking thing, and I don't see how this White House gets around Libya. I'm not happy about it. I'm not going to run around in a circle and tinkle on myself and not vote for the guy about it. But this is the kind of thing. This is the kind of bullshit that I voted for Obama to not have anymore. Was these kind of bullshit psycho? And now we're flying drones into Yemen. What the fuck is that? Those are the things that concern me. But there's political. These are the kinds of exactly the kind of things they want him to do. To own personally is exactly the kind of thing the right screams about when a Democratic president does it. Oh my God, it's presidential fiat. He's a tyrant. He's ruling from the White House. You're not supposed to do that. Dump it all on Congress. That's what I don't understand about this Libya thing. Dump it on Congress. Let them vote on it. I'm not so wedded to the idea that Muammar Gaddafi's got to go that we can't turn it over to Congress. Let them fucking argue about it. Why is he making this a thing? Just give it to Congress.
Yeah. Well, it's you know what? That's Libya is a no-win. Regardless of what he does, he's going to be attacked one way or another. He's going to be attacked for being weak, or he's going to be attacked for going too far. And right now, I mean, I believe that he's following a fairly reasonable middle ground on Libya. He's not leading the charge. He's not. You know what?
I found myself actually agreeing with John Boehner with the statement that John Boehner put out about the letter he sent saying, look, what's the deal?
Yeah,
you
know what? If the president wasn't doing anything, John Boehner would have released a letter. Why isn't the president doing anything about Libya?
No, I don't think that's true.
I think it is.
Maybe 6 months ago or whenever the fuck this all started.
How many letters have been written by members of Congress?
A billion times worse right now.
Yeah.
This was what I was talking about when it happened months ago, is this precedence. Because now fucking Syria has lost its mind. And it's, you know, Libya is North Africa. Syria is a next-door neighbor to Israel. It might have something to do with it. I'm just saying, look, hand it over. Follow the rules, President Obama. Follow the rules. I read the War Powers Act. It seems pretty clear to me that when you do shit like this, you gotta, you know, hey, Congress, psst, you know. It's kind of what got us into Vietnam. Not that I'm saying Libya's ever going to – and I don't care how he's doing it, giving it all over to NATO and not leading the charge, blah, blah, blah. If it's any sort of military – U.S. military intervention, it needs to go to Congress. I don't see the downside of sending it to Congress. Let them argue about it. Fuck it.
Well,
fuck Muammar Gaddafi. Go after that guy in Syria.
Right.
Assad. That guy's a fucking – you've been seeing what they're doing over there? Killing kids, sending them back to their parents with their balls cut off.
Nice.
I've been watching those clips. I'm not kidding. They're sending these kids back. They're abducting children, preteens and teenagers, and breaking their knees and breaking their legs and putting cigarettes out on them. And one kid got sent back with his fucking nuts cut off. The whole fucking world's falling apart. Go read the War Powers Act. He's totally in violation of that. But I'll still vote for him. So next. He's going to drop a great big bomb on Syria.
So should he get congressional approval to do it?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. I don't see the downside of going to Congress and saying, hey, I'd like to go drop some bombs on this prick that's cutting kids' balls off. And then letting Congress look like the fucking moops that they are. That's the thing. Make Congress look like the douchebags they are.
Yeah.
And then you can stand up in front of the world and go, huh, you know, we tried. We tried to save the world and be the world's policeman or whatever, but Congress got his head up his ass. Sorry. I tried. Barack Obama, 2012. You know, I just don't see the downside. It just makes him look like an imperial president. I don't want that. I was hoping for the end of the imperial presidency.
He's not being imperial. This is not, and Libya is not imperial action. Libya is part of a NATO.
Then go to Congress and get approval for that. What's the downside of that? He didn't do that.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's fine. Go to Congress and get approval, but don't call him an imperial president. I mean, that's
until he goes to Congress. No, that's the definition of imperial presidency.
That's justice. No, it's not imperial.
Yes,
imperial means empire.
It means
expansion of territory.
Putting his feet up on the desk, going, you know what? Fuck it, I can do anything I want. And that's what he's done with Libya. He has not gotten.
That might be reminiscent of the unitary executive, but it's not imperial. Imperial implies, you know, land grabs for the sake of expanding territory.
I'll use the terms interchangeably. The United. It's him acting imperially by himself. I just don't see the downside in going to Congress. I don't, especially for fucking Libya of all places. Jesus Christ! I don't even know what's going on over there anymore. Nobody's updating me. When's the last time on the news you saw? Well, today in Libya.
No one's sending you any communiques these days.
No one is giving me news.
You're not looking at the daily briefings,
right? Yeah. I'm not getting my PDB. Motherfuckers. I'm just saying, look, it's one of the things I'm going to bust President Obama's balls about. Why don't you tell Congress to just fucking rubber stamp this for you and then get it off your back? This should not be a bone of contention. Yes, I understand the ridiculous political irony of Boehner, of all people, and the Republicans getting their little tiny, mousy, chicken shit, chicken hawk balls in a bunch about anything post-Iraq. I mean, of course, that's ironic, but they've got a point. Just let Congress fucking deal with it. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
I don't want another fucking Gulf of Tonkin in you know, Libya. Not that we're ever going to get one. I'm just saying, follow the rules, Barack.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if they had said no, if Congress had said no, and it's very likely they would have.
Then we wouldn't be worried about it. And I wouldn't lose any sleep over Muammar shooting his own fucking people. Just like I'm not really losing any sleep over what's going on in Syria. But I think that's worse. I think that if anything, that's what we need to be sorting out. It's not like fucking Libya was such a – that's why I just don't understand. I don't understand the calculus at work here. Libya was not a big deal. I mean, it was awful for Libyans, but I've always said if a place is ripe for revolution, the people will get up off their asses and revolt. We did. The French did. That didn't work out too good, but people will revolt, and they'll revolt successfully when they're mature enough and they're ready and they're angry enough, and they don't need our help dropping bombs on shit. And Muammar's still there and giving us the fingers, so it's just a great big clusterfuck. Let it be Congress's clusterfuck.
All right.
Goddamn imperial president. I'm going to vote Republican next year.
He's not an imperial president.
Well, he says you.
Okay. Today's show brought to you, as it always is, by Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. They are at, as we said before, they're at Netroots Nation right now, so you got to stop by and get yourself a free soap if you're going to Netroots Nation. And also, they've got donut holes. And here's the new commercial from Bubble Genius.
We join a Sarah Palin press conference already in progress.
So, we left Ohio, which is one of the 13 original colonies, And then we went to visit the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and they didn't even have any free mayonnaise samples or ketchup. And after that, we went to Mount Rushmore to see a symbol of our American freedoms. And do you know it's a lot smaller than it looks like in the photos? Look, it fits in the palm of my hand.
Half Governor Palin, that looks like a soap.
It's the perfect rememberation of our trip across America. You know, and the detail on the Founding Fathers' faces is incredible, especially Ronald Reagan's. And you know, it smells great.
But Ms. Palin, what you have in your hands is Mount Washmore, the delightful evergreen-scented replica soap made by Bubble Genius. Did you see the real Mount Rushmore?
Is that a gotcha question?
Rimshot.
Celebrate your freedom's the Americanness in the shower with Mount Washmore.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
We need more people to sign up on iTunes.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a lot of.
Yeah, I can.
Got a lot of them now, but we need more. So tell all your friends to sign up for and subscribe, because it's free, and then you get instantly whenever there's a new show, you get instantly that show in your iTunes. It's very convenient that way.
And then
you can put it on your iPod, and you can carry it around in your pants.
Mm-hmm.
And also, by the way,
I have an iPod. I have a Creative, you know, the company Creative.
Yeah,
it's called Creative, and it weighs about 7 pounds. It's but I love that fucking thing. I've worn it out; it's never broken. I've had it for like 5 years. It's pre iPod technology.
Does it have that crank on the side of it, like the telephone from MASH?
Yeah, like, you gotta crank it up.
Yeah.
Then it, you know, you get 20 minutes of.
You have to talk to Sparky.
Sparky, yeah.
Sparky, I'm trying to connect to iTunes.
Klinger, and that was awful.
Yeah.
That show should have gone to hell when Radar left.
Mm. Klinger
was just no kind of replacement for Radar.
And if you want to get 15% off your whole order from your entire order from Bubble Genius, put in Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS, and get 15% off. Your entire order at BubbleGenius.com, because it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And make
Huzzah.
Sure to stop by and visit them at Netroots Nation.
It's the best, I'm going to go. I'm registering myself right now for Tea Party Camp.
Tea Party Camp. Yeah, isn't that great?
Okay. Yeah.
You've read about what's being featured at Tea Party Camp?
Yeah, what I'm waiting for is the documentary like the one from the Jesus Camp. That remember that documentary? Yeah. I'm waiting for somebody to sneak into Tea Party Camp with a camera, get all good details.
The organization hosting the Tea Party Camp, which falls under the Tea Party umbrella, hopes to introduce kids ages 8 to 12 to principles that include, quote, America is good, quote, I believe in God, and, quote, I work hard for what I have and I will share it with who I want. Government cannot force me to be charitable, unquote.
That's right. God damn it. I will not be forced to be charitable to my fellow fucking citizens who are also in turn charitable to me.
Yeah.
That's the part I don't get, is that people just seem to think the taxes are a one-way thing. Like they go out from me and that's it. It doesn't, there's nothing, like if I'm standing, the rest of the human population of America is to my right and all my money goes that way and nothing comes from the left. That's what I don't understand. It's like you fucking roads you drive on and your schools and everything, the people that are richer than you, and I guarantee you teabaggers that's basically almost everybody who's richer than you. That's where your tax money comes from. That's where your benefits come from that direction. So fuck you. It's this quasi-Randianism of I can't be forced to be charitable. Mm-hmm. I'm charitable through my church, and that's a choice. I choose to be charitable.
Yeah.
It's this selfishness is good sort of thing when it comes to giving through the government. Fuck you, teabaggers.
Yeah. Well, they've decided, and of course this is a continued fiction of the Tea Party – right, is they've decided that somehow they can pick and choose what their tax money goes to. So I choose not to share my money with corporations that receive subsidies.
That pay shit nothing.
Yeah. I don't want my money going to defense contractors.
No, I'd rather not ever buy a bomb with my tax money, ever. or a bullet of any kind.
In fact, I'll go so far as to say I don't want any of my tax money. I work hard for what I earn, and I don't want to share it with any red states.
Mm-hmm.
So red states, you know what? I want my money back.
Mm-hmm.
Government can't force me to be charitable to the red states, so screw you.
Correct.
Yeah, that's it. They just don't understand that. It's not a. You put everything goes into a big pool based on a progressive tax rate system, and then progressive enough. Yeah, and then that money gets distributed. It gets redistributed everywhere. Your money does. My money does. Everyone's money does. It gets redistributed to tax subsidies for corporations. It gets redistributed for Medicare for old people. It gets redistributed for Medicaid for poor people. It just gets. It goes out there. And if you want to start itemizing what your money goes to, good luck with that. Because as you screw other people from your lack of charity, so will you be screwed.
But to me, the really egregious thing in that quote is that they focus on the charitable part. And to me, that's a fucking racist dog whistle as far as I'm concerned. If taxation – Why are they focusing on that part, charitable, when 9/10 of your tax dollars go to I wouldn't call Medicare charity as much as just a fucking medical necessity. But yeah, that's one of the big entitlements. But why did it necessarily have to be charity? Because what they're talking about there, it's not Medicare. It's fucking welfare is what they're talking about. They're talking about food for poor people. They're talking about welfare for brown people. It's all just racism codified in this bullshit. You can't force me to be charitable thing. I hate these. I hate these people. Yeah. I hate these people.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'd probably hate them a little less if they just had a basic understanding with how America works, how it functions, how our system, how government functions. They just don't, have any idea.
No.
They don't have any idea. It's screaming at the fucking raindrops is what they're doing. Yeah.
Lowest taxation since fucking Eisenhower. Eisenhower was a Republican who would absolutely refused to do any sort of tax cuts if it would add to the deficit. And that's why all through Ike's glorious 8-year reign of benignity, the top incremental rate was like 90-fucking-1%.
Yeah.
Republican. Mm-hmm. Back when that meant something, back when there was real – there's a great, great article I sent to my dad. There's a great article on Sullivan right now. He just reposted it to the top of the board about what true conservatism means, about what real conservatism was. And I encourage everyone to read it. I mean, that's what's so great about Sullivan is that he is at heart a true conservative. And like I've said, find me a real conservative that believes in the things that he lays out in this post, and I'll vote for that guy.
Yeah.
There hasn't been one of those in my lifetime, in my voting lifetime, mm-hmm. or yours. There has not been a true conservative candidate since pre-Reagan.
Yeah, no, absolutely
not. I mean,
not.
Look at have you ever looked at what Richard Nixon accomplished and been stunned by it prior to Watergate, prior to him being a douche? The stuff that he actually accomplished. It was remarkable politically, stuff that you can't imagine that a Republican would do, especially a Nixon.
Yeah.
But pre-Reagan, they were serious conservatives. They were William F. Buckley conservatives.
Yeah.
And that you have real trouble arguing with. Fiscally conservative, deficits matter, you know, but with a heart. Nixon signed all kinds of fucking welfare-type, you know, social programs into law.
Hell, he signed the Environmental Protection Agency.
Right.
In the law. He created the Environmental Protection Agency, for God's sake. You know what?
Right.
Look, I mean, let's not be totally revision. I'm not saying let's you and I. But I mean, you know, there is sort of this theme running to create a contrast with the modern Republican Party that somehow Reagan and conservatives prior to Reagan were comparatively liberal. Let's not paint them with too pretty a brush. But yeah. They did some things that would be that they would be kicked out of the Republican Party. Grover Norquist leading the charge.
That guy started to lose his hold. Thank God.
Yeah.
Looks like there's a little bit of Grover Norquist backlash going on.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the true like Friedman. I can't wait for Grover Norquist to die so I can go fucking piss on his grave. Because he is literally one of the sole unique individuals that is literally killing this country. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is such a psychopathic ideologue about taxes and about his ideology is crippling us.
Yeah.
Making you sign a purity pledge
to
his idea. oh my God, that guy's got to go. Just like Milton Friedman, I'm going to piss on his grave when that guy dies.
Show me one period of time in the history of the United States, or let's say the modern history, let's say from the 1920s forward, one time when conservative economic policy didn't lead us, and what was eventually to become Reaganomics, didn't lead us into a massive recession on the heels of it. It implemented for a good part of a decade, and then we would collapse into a major recession.
Yep.
When has that ever not happened?
Not happened, right. The data is in, and Sullivan says it in this book. The data is in. We know for a fact that your bullshit tax policies suck donkey cock. Yep. We know that now. The data is in. It's pure ideology at this point. Mm-hmm. It is the most unserious. And I have massive disconnects and concerns and problems with the far liberal left as an ideology, as a political party. But I would rather err on the side of social conscience and social and fucking just helping the little guy than I would err on the side of the common Republican Party today with their theocracy and their bullshit hand jobs for corporations. Period.
Yeah. And why?
Find me a true William F. Buckley conservative. Back when Buckley was considered the great brain, when they didn't shit on intellectualism, I was surprised. I read all about Bachman today because I really don't know much more about her than that she's just a wild-eyed moron. She has a law degree, a tax law degree from William and Mary.
Yeah, it's staggering, isn't it?
That is staggering.
It calls into question whether or not she's faking it, was she deliberately being an idiot? Because that means something.
That's exactly what I thought. I'm like, that's not an easy degree to get. She went to some third-rate, I don't know, undergrad school, but she got a law degree from William and Mary. That is that's serious business. That's the oldest college in the fucking country. And what the hell? That just created a cognitive dissonance in my head that I wanted to tear my skull open and like flush my brain down the toilet. I was like, does not compute. It's like it's Kirk giving one of those robots a fucking logic probe on Star Trek, making their heads blow off. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
It's like, how does that person get up and rail against the Washington elites and the snooty toots with their educations? You went to fucking William and Mary.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm beginning to realize, and I hate to say it, because it kind of makes me look like an idiot to say I'm beginning to realize, but it's not the conservative economic policy, conservative ideas in general, aren't so much about those conservatives being stupid as much as it is about those conservatives being utterly and completely cynical. Because what they know...
Manipulative.
Manipulative. Because what they know for a fact is that all of these ridiculous things that they say, and mind you, many of them know how ridiculous it really, really is. They only say it because they know that it flies with their voters. They know, they know they can squeeze that bullshit onto a bumper sticker and it works in the format of a bumper sticker. You try, but as soon as you try to piece it apart, as soon as you try to deconstruct something like that, it falls into a thousand different pieces of utterly confusing smart bomb, and you go, what the hell are we looking at here? Because there's no logic. It doesn't make any sense. And it's certainly, you talk about someone who's got a law degree from William & Mary, that it can't possibly make sense.
Right. Their whole game is playing to the white... To the disgruntlement and the resentments of the white middle, the lower end of the white middle class spectrum, and that's one reason why I think this election in 2012 is going to be so interesting, because Romney, let's go with the assumption that Romney gets the nomination. I'm still not convinced, especially after the strong showing that Bachman pulled. I think Bachman is going to win Iowa. It's going to split between I think Romney will take New Hampshire, but I'm still not convinced Romney can get the nomination. I'm just not. But if let's say he does, and he probably will, I don't see Romney as being able to thread that needle that we're just talking about. This just bullshit disingenuousness that plays to the utter rank stupidity of the rank and file Republican voter. The teabagging, theocratic leaning voter, the ones that really buy into all this shit, the birthers and those are massive numbers of this party. I don't see a Romney who is otherwise a smart you know, together businessman with a brain in his head. I don't see him with the personality to thread that needle. He's already starting to fuck up with the base by, you know, believing in climate science. Oh my God, what's he talking about? Right? It's just, he just does not have that personality. McCain just sort of dunderheaded his way through it. He's just sort of a lovable, old, grouchy grandpa kind of dumbass. You know, just, he just sort of dumbassed his way through it. Romney is not that thing. And it's going to cause a serious circuitry blowout, I think, with the voters, where they're just like, eh, why aren't you pandering to us more?
Well, here's how Romney's going to get the nomination, because they're going to make a deal with the Tea Party, right? And they're going to say, well, you know what, look, if you support Romney, we'll give you someone who's going to deliver your red meat, and that's going to be Bachman or some other wingnut on the right.
As the VP, you mean?
Yeah, as the VP. And that's how it's going to happen. That's how it worked with George W. Bush. You know, the far right bought, you know, put up with the compassionate conservative pitch. Yeah. Because they were going to get Cheney, or they were going to get Bush, some wing nut.
I don't know, though. Bush spent the better early parts of his campaign really leaning on this bullshit, you know, entirely Karl Rove invented evangelicalism, mm-hmm. or new, this sort of new Christianity of Bush's. And Bush made a lot of promises, a lot of reach arounds to the conservative, to the Christian right, that he never followed through on. I don't see Romney, especially with his magic underpants Mormonism, being able to play that card. So yeah, he is gonna. He's gonna have to bring in. It's gonna have to be entirely on the strength of a wingnut lunatic VP, which, you know, we saw how well that worked in 2008, right? Yeah. It's just gonna be interesting. It's really gonna be interesting to see how Romney gathers the flock.
Yeah.
Because I just don't see how this guy can do it.
Well, yeah, as long as he keeps insisting that everything he's done up to this point has been wrong.
A mistake, yeah.
I mean, that's where he's going to get
there.
Yeah,
I mean,
T-Paw
got screwed with his pants on, having to, you know, he's right there with Romney and that bullshit CNN thing was, you know, trying to go, call it Obamacare right into his face.
Oh, God.
You know, he wouldn't do it. Oh, I'm scared now.
So ridiculous.
Romney's so big and impressive.
That's how dumb Republican politics are. It gets down to, please, can you please confess to your ridiculous compound word? Can you please repeat
Can you
your...
cop to your bullshit bumper sticker?
Yeah, exactly.
Obamacare.
Obamacare. It was like Stephen Colbert called it the Brangelina of Republican politics. So ridiculous. And now, speaking of Tim Pawlenty, and speaking of ridiculous tax policy, you know, Pawlenty rolled out his tax plan not too long ago.
Oh yeah, it's good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like quadruple, even more than that, than the Bush tax cuts.
I mean, and it's never ever been done in American history. The kind of growth he's talking about, 5%. He said over the course of 10 years or something. Bullshit. Right. Never ever been done ever.
In 2013, the Pawlenty plan would give people in the top 0.1% on the income scale, that's i.e. people with incomes above $2.7 million, an average annual tax cut of $1.8 million, which is more than four times what they got last year from the Bush tax cuts.
God.
I mean, he's looking at the CBPP put together this chart. I mean, it's staggering to look at, because you see on one hand these little blue blips on the graph, which are the Bush tax cuts for each of the income tax brackets, and then the red of the Pawlenty, the red bars representing the Pawlenty tax plan, just like towering over them.
Yeah, yeah. This Republicans like Pawlenty, and then the Wall Street Journal, who came out in such favor of that plan but said it didn't go far enough, they will not be satisfied. They cannot be placated until literally tax policy in this country is the scene from Time Bandits when John Cleese as Robin Hood is handing out money to poor people and then his buddy is punching him in the face. Yeah. Like, they want poor people to line up and just hand rich people their money and then let the rich person just pummel them in the face. Mm-hmm. That's Republican tax policy now. Fuck taxes. We're just going to give you poor people's money now. You don't have to pay anything. We're going to give you everybody else's money.
God,
ridiculous. And he knows he's done. Pawlenty had the worst night of his political life on that fucking debate. He's done. He's a non-starter.
Yeah, and he always was.
And what the fuck was Newt doing there to begin with?
Newt's toast.
He didn't have a fucking staff to even hand him his charged up BlackBerry behind the scenes. He's got nobody. He's done.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying last week that the whole idea with Newt is just so he can replace that disgraced former Speaker of the House item on his resume
with
something like
political, presidential candidate.
Presidential candidate, right?
Yeah.
Because he's not, it's ridiculous, the notion of Newt Gingrich running for a national office. Like, the idea of Newt Gingrich kissing babies is just scary to me.
Yeah.
It's like I compare Newt Gingrich kissing a baby to like Ghostbusters facing off against the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, just leaning down on them, ready to crush them. I mean, can you imagine a baby reacting to a big pumpkinhead Newt leaning in to give him a big sloppy kiss?
Oh my God! Yeah,
Newt, he'd accidentally bite the baby or something. Like he'd actually just take a big chunk out of the baby.
Yeah, that's he's just a non-starter. Most of them up there were just clown shoes. But, really Romney, I watched him pretty closely in 2008, I wish something would happen to get him off the board so that we could get back to a Palin Bachman. He's just too sane. He's too center. And the establishment knows it, and that's why they're going to be pushing hard to get him in there, because they know that the insane and the establishment, whatever it is now, whoever's running the party, I don't even know who it is now after Michael Steele's clusterfuckage, but they're looking at they're not stupid. They're looking at what happened in 2010 and what that got him. Romney's just too sane and that's what I think is working against him right now. I'm still not convinced he can get the nomination, but we'll see.
Well, he can, because the calculation from the far right is that he can be controlled like George W. Bush was, because he is that sort of empty vessel.
Yeah.
I forget which columnist. Some columnist today was describing him specifically as an empty vessel. Like, there's nothing there. I mean, he's basically because he's completely, forsaken everything he's done so far, minus his business successes in the Olympics. But, I mean, there's nothing there. So what they believe is they can go in and they can, make sure they can strong arm him into stacking his cabinet and his White House with, with wingnuts, with, Michelle Bachmann, Steve King types. And that's what he's going to do. So they're going to call. They believe that they can get him. That they can call all the shots through him.
I don't know. Maybe Romney will prove to be cagier and smarter than does strike me as something of a genial dumbass. Yeah, I mean, he obviously has some sense somewhere. But I think there's something about. I think it probably has. I think the combination. I think what. The way he reminds me of Bush is in that sort of insular dumbassery that you get from being super hyper wealthy. Like, I think there's something about the bubble you live in when you're that fucking rich. I mean, he and his wife are worth something above $250 million personally. And he comes from a founding father kind of – a founding family. Like, they go back way, way back. It's just old, old money. I think there's just an insularity there that makes you sort of a genial dumbass to the common guy. And that is not going to help him at all in this election with this particular electorate. So, but the economy's still in some pretty rough shape. That's the biggest hurdle Obama's got to deal with right now. You got to fucking eke out some jobs, do something.
Yeah. Again, I don't know what the hell he can do. I mean,
short of a second stimulus.
Yeah. Short of a second stimulus, which will never happen in a million years. No. So, I mean, all he's got left is some ridiculous flailing, some sort of compromise with people whose ideas have been proven to completely have failed. So, I mean, this goes back to, here's my complaint with the White House. Is they're going to end up compromising with the Republicans, who they have repeatedly said drove us into a ditch. How do you compromise? Yeah. Because we're only going to drive us halfway into a ditch this time. Because it's going to be a little bit of our ideas, a little bit of their ideas. Mm-hmm. You say, well, you can't say someone's driven us into a ditch and say, well, you know what? I'm going to meet them halfway.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It just doesn't make any sense. And so, what we're going to end up getting is some kind of compromise on taxes, some sort of compromise on Medicare, and it's going to be painful to watch. What else? I mean, what else can you do? I don't know. I mean, completely. And furthermore, I'm getting tired of hearing people saying that the Democrats aren't doing anything, that nothing is happening from the White House, nothing is happening from the Democrats. Well, you know what? That's what we warned everybody about prior to November. We said, look, you're going to give Republicans the Congress back. We're going to have nothing but, you know, stagnation. We're going to have nothing but gridlock in Washington. And that's exactly what's happened. Nothing.
Well, the Republicans in the House have been busy. I mean, they're passing all sorts of new, anti-abortion, or they're, writing all sorts of new anti-women legislation. They can't get that shit out fast enough.
Yeah.
That's, that's where I don't understand where all the fury is over. It's like, look, even in heartland America, where the dumbassery roams free and chews wild grass out in the prairie lands, where they hate abortion. I mean, I can't even believe I'm moving into a state that's so pro-life as Iowa. I mean, I'm gonna have to get Peanut out of there before she, flowers, because what the fuck? I really don't want my daughter growing up in a state that's so out of its head about abortion. I mean, they're talking about, there's a doctor in Council Bluffs. There's an abortion doctor that's trying to set up shop in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and the whole state house right now, the whole Iowa legislature is doing nothing but debating whether to let this guy have a license. I mean, that's all they're worried about right now. It's like, even these people have to understand that the economy and jobs and, economic growth trump their bullshit social issues right now, that we've got to put that crap aside now and get serious. But apparently not. Yeah. Apparently it's all about, getting up in that vagina, getting in that womb.
Well, yeah, and you know where we're losing? We're losing because people like Jane Hampshire are focusing on, shaming the president, as John Aramosa said at Netroots Nation. Shaming, we got to shame the president. Meanwhile, we are focusing some effort in Wisconsin, but we're losing at the local and state level. That's where we're failing. Progressives need to refocus their efforts. Stop challenging on the upper tier of the political spectrum. Go down. Get dirty. Go door to door. Challenge people on the local level. So we don't have situations like Wisconsin anymore. So we can start rolling back some of these ridiculous abortion laws that are happening in Alabama and some of these other states. Mm-hmm. That is where the entire... Forgive me for using this. The entire Overton window is moving to the right because these guys are able to win locally. They're able to win in the state houses.
Yeah. And where there's always political capital to be spent at the local level. Yeah. And if you're that, if you've got that big a movement and that much of a mouth on you, then get involved where you can actually make a difference, where you can actually, because it is all bottom up. Mm-hmm. I mean, the president proved that to us in 2008 with just an absolute insurgency on the ground. Yep. So why bash away at the top where there's just no political capital left? It had a remarkable, absolutely remarkable legislative record so far. Start at the bottom and work your way up, you dill weed.
That's right. Half the progressive movement is spending its time wagging its finger, shaming a president who's batting 500. Batting 500 on gay rights alone.
Right.
Much less putting together the largest middle class tax cut in the history of America. Putting together groundbreaking healthcare reform legislation that is actually going to give middle class Americans, regular Americans making $50,000 a year, basically a check for $10,000 every year.
Right.
Here's an extra $10,000 to help you pay for healthcare. Oh, and by the way, we're going to set up an exchange that's going to reduce your premiums even more.
Yeah. Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense to me, and that's where I get frustrated, and that's where I get aggravated when we just really can't get it together, and a lot of these people, a lot of these guys who claim to be the centerpiece of the progressive movement become all about, it's just like the Republicans. The Republicans all about what fits on a bumper sticker. Well, a lot of the progressives are all about what's going to bring us the most traffic. Well, shaking our fist at the president, saying, "Oh yeah, President Obama, you're just like Bush." That's going to get them traffic, but you know what? Right. It's gonna hurt America, and it's gonna hurt the progressive movement. And it's exactly what it's doing. And I don't know if any discussion is happening at Netroots Nation with regards to that. All I've heard about so far is about how we're gonna break up with the president. How ridiculous is that?
That is just ridiculous. Oh my God. Absolutely retarded.
Well, Bubble Genius is at Nesters Nation right now. And they've got a kiosk set up there, and you can go get some of the best goddamn soap you've ever had. And I'm sure they've got some political soaps there, too. So you can check out their Michelle Bachmann soap. And their, I know they've got like a Joe Lieberman soap.
Yep. They've got a Boehner soap.
Boehner soap.
I have scrubbed my magnificent taint many times with Boehner's giant face.
Oh, so I'm also told that there is no, they do not sell the hibiscus soap. They only give me the hibiscus soap, and they don't sell it. So,
but I'm sure
there's
a,
yeah, there's lots of other soap that you can use at Bubble Genius that not only smells great, but it also feels great and keeps you nice and fresh and clean. And they also have their Mount Rushmore soap, which they're selling right now. And I know it because it's in their new commercial from Bubble Genius.
We join a Sarah Palin press conference already in progress.
So, we left Ohio, which is one of the 13 original colonies. And then we went to visit the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and they didn't even have any free mayonnaise samples or ketchup. And after that, we went to Mount Rushmore to see a symbol of our American freedoms. And do you know it's a lot smaller than it looks like in the photos? Look, it fits in the palm of my hand.
Half Governor Palin, that looks like a soap.
It's the perfect rememberation of our trip across America. You know, and the detail on the Founding Fathers' faces is incredible, especially Ronald Reagan's. And you know, it smells great.
But Ms. Palin, what you have in your hands is Mount Washmore, the delightful evergreen-scented replica soap made by Bubble Genius. Did you see the real Mount Rushmore?
Is that a gotcha question?
Celebrate your freedomsy Americanness in the shower with Mount Washmore.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Yep.
Did you see that thing that the tour guide in Boston, the statement that guy made about how maybe it was his fault? What the fucking word salad she made out of Paul Revere?
No, really? What did you say?
No, it was interesting. No, I'll have to find it again. I think I probably read it on Sullivan. That's where I get most of my news. But they had taken a tour, and he told her all about this. Like Paul Revere started like a bell ringer society, and there was this whole thing about bell ringing. So basically you can cut her a huge amount of slack off of what this guy said. And he said he won't cop to the way she arranged it. Like he got a dig in on her, like, you know, what she said was sort of word salad-y, and he's not going to take any responsibility for how bad she mangled what he said. Mm-hmm. But pretty much all the bullshit things that she said fit in somehow to this tapestry of history that he spouted off in her ear like 20 minutes earlier. So
yeah,
it kind of made me feel sorry for her. He was right. I mean, his bottom line was, look, the way it came out of her mouth was just nothing what I, you know, not the way I said it.
Yeah.
And then Sullivan capped it off by saying, not really somebody you want, you know, with the nuclear code. So
yeah, well, that was
cut her a break.
And in fact, it's funny you mentioned that, because that was actually my point from last week, which was, you know, because remember, it was 2 weeks ago that happened with the whole ringing the bells and firing the warning shots. And then I was wondering, well, is it something – it happened right after our show 2 weeks ago. And then a week later, do we still talk about it? And then I was wondering, well, look, it's not so much – even if she got the history right, the issue is the way she's – it's impossible for her to construct a reasonable thought.
Right. It's a disordered mind, like I said.
Exactly.
It's and just a disordered mind, a cluttered, jumbled brain pan.
Yeah, and that's what speaks more to her
ineptitude,
to her incompetence. She cannot form a sentence. She cannot form a thought. She cannot adequately express herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's the obvious cues to a real deep set narcissism and a pathological inability to be wrong, and that's a that is a terror in a potential president.
Right, because you can you can teach and learn the facts. You cannot teach the natural ability to be able to speak and communicate,
And to parse data and then draw meaningful conclusions from it. I mean, you know, anybody, any dumbass in history 102 can take in, you know, July 4, 1776 or, you know, Paul Revere did it, and then regurgitate it. But what, you know, what makes a president or just a decent thinker is, you know, disseminating that data into some meaningful thought, some conclusion that has, you know, some relevance somewhere.
Yeah.
She's absolutely incapable of doing that.
Right.
And, I think it's because a lot of that requires introspection and self-reflection, and she has none – the classic narcissist has none of those functions in their brain. I mean, Bush was one. We watched that for 8 years. Bush, to this day, cannot cop to any failure on his part.
Right.
To any responsibility for any of it.
Speaking of stupid, I mean, how really and truly stupid was Anthony Weiner?
Oh, fuck. I mean, I was hoping we'd just get through this whole thing without even talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah, colossally stupid. Colossally.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you know, a lack of judgment so immense as to require his, you know, not representing people on a political level. That's all I'm going to say about it. I mean, I'm not surprised that here's my only political insight into this, and frankly, I don't think we should even waste time. Because look at this great conversation we've had, and a heated argument about really important things, mostly, and because there are more important things to talk about.
But no. Wait, hold on a second. This is important. This is important from our perspective as being critics of the media to talk about this issue from the point of view of saying that it is stupid. It is that he did behave badly, and then segue directly into why this should not be covered. I mean, because, you know, look, I think that's part of what we do on this show.
Yeah. No.
What we are is what we do is we sit and we hold the media accountable for these things, and everything about the Anthony Weiner scandal has something to do with the way the media handles issues, whether it's sexual issues or whether it's political issues. If you boil it all down, the only reason this is an issue is because the media covers it. And so, and why does the media cover it? Because people want to hear about it. And why do people, and people, it's this feedback loop that's created between what the media reports and what people want. So,
well, sure. There's equal blame to be had, right, between the eaters of it and the producers of the chum. I mean, there's you know, it's bread and circuses, man, bread and circuses.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point that I was gonna lead up to is not so much that Anthony Weiner was stupid for pseudo cheating on his wife or full fledged cheating on his wife. I don't know what the line of cheating is to be drawn here, but it's not so much he was stupid for misusing Twitter like a flippin' idiot.
Fucking
because
retard.
Because anyone who's on Twitter for 2 seconds knows that you don't send shit like that through Twitter. Stupidity of Anthony Weiner is feeding this media machine, is not just vindicating Andrew Breitbart, and that was stupid too. Because the whole lying and cover up, that was stupid. Because now this guy is all kinds of empowered. But the centerpiece of why Anthony Weiner is a phenomenal moron is because he did something that he knew full well would feed an ugly, ridiculous media machine.
Sure.
And it would completely distract everybody from what is really important.
Yeah, and that, I mean, the reason I'm not shedding any tears or running around saying David Vitter, like the rest of the fucking retards on the left, is that stupidity alone, I mean, just the sheer stupidity of it disqualifies him, in my mind, for holding, you know, any sort of responsible office, because that is galactic stupidity. I mean, I'm full of all kinds of reckless stupidity. I will cop to that. But I'm nobody's representative in a political sphere. I don't represent a borough or a district or any number of people other than my own dumbass self. Okay. Mm. So that just in sheer stupidity points, he should excuse himself from office.
Yeah.
Here's the other point that I'm – but I'm, one reason I'm happy about it, happy about him stepping down, is that it either raises or lowers, depending on how you look at it, the bar for what the political system, hopefully on the right or the left, will bear as far as these kind of bullshit scandals. Like post this now, post Wiener, the David Vedders of the world are going to have to fucking walk out. I mean, they're going to have to be done. So I think there's a good precedent here. You know, I'm not going to shed any. He was one of the Democratic rock stars for a while. He had a big mouth, Wiener. He was able to make good points, and we all rallied behind him. But he's obviously a very, very stupid person, extremely galactically stupid. But now it lowers the it sets a bar for what Washington should be able to bear as far as scandal, very, very low, to the point where now hopefully the post Wiener era David Vitters of the world get kicked to the curb immediately.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing.
And from our perspective too, what it does is as media critics, it forces us to talk about this stuff too. And going back to what I was saying initially, is it's important for us to cover this because who else is going? I mean, if everyone who covers the media decided we're not going to talk about Anthony Weiner, then the media gets away with it. And yeah. so then it just forms this Mobius loop of bullshit. And it all begins and ends with Anthony Weiner. And it begins and ends with everyone who engages, whether it's Bill Clinton or David Vitter. And suffice to say, you know, it's all a matter of visual aids with Anthony Weiner. There are crazy
absolutely
visuals.
This would have been nothing if it was if it was all just innuendo or some woman came out and said that he did it. It's absolutely all image driven, which is again just speaks to his galactic stupidity.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. And again, and with the media, I mean. There's really no such thing in a 24-hour news world as a slow media day. It's only as slow as the media chooses it to be, right? I mean, you could talk all day long about this kid in Syria that got his balls knocked off, all day long if you wanted to. They're never going to talk about that because it's so grim and awful, and nobody's going to buy ad space in a 12-minute segment about a kid getting tortured and cigarettes put out on him, right? But people go fucking nuts for nuts in a swanky pair of boxers, right? So I want to blame the media, but to a point, you said it best. I mean, there's an audience for it. There's a hunger for it. It's the same fuckholes that watch Jersey Shore and think it's awesome. It's just the decadence. And again, Sullivan's been tracking this, been running this running thread about when did our political system just become so utterly decadent and fiddle playing while Rome burns. Mm-hmm. And there's all these fascinating opinions about when it happened.
Yeah.
And it's just meat for that that grist mill.
That's exactly it. Because and the only thing that can really happen, and again, this is such, and I always criticize Dylan Radigan for proposing these big broad stroke ideas, but this is really the case, I believe, where it's a matter of money in politics, and it's a matter of money in the news. As soon as you take out corporate sponsorship of newscasts, then you're going to get back to the wonk, and you're going to stop reporting, because then you can get away with it. If you don't have to worry about ratings, then you can report about, from a matter of journalistic integrity alone, you can report about the things that really matter, the things that you can really sink your teeth in, the things you read about in, like, The Economist, which I don't know how they get away with it, but they do. And, you know, it actually kind of works with The Economist, where they do sell advertising. They don't sell a lot, but they do, and they're able to have kind of a prestigious name. And if you if you want to sell advertising on a newscast that is somewhat wonky, pitch it as being something that is a matter of prestige.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pitch it as a matter of
prestige. It's obviously possible. I mean, Rachel Maddow gets away with it night after night, and that is hopelessly, utterly wonky. But it's also the. This generation of news watcher has forgotten – well, the current generation of news watcher has never known real news. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They have no CPU in their brain to process real news, you know, like the old Murrow fucking Cronkite style, you know, where there's a guy in a hat behind the scenes typing his own copy on you know, blue paper and then bringing it in and reading it. That they just don't have any processor for that, right? It's got to be dolled up as entertainment with these hairdos, you know, talking into the camera. That, but it's obviously possible. I mean, some pretty high end names sell ad space on Rachel Maddow, and that's just 60 minutes of wonk. Yeah. I mean, hardcore wonk. I mean, it can even overdo my circuitry sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think there, she's definitely an exception, and yeah, there's no doubt about that. The problem, however, is that it's not, she's not entirely as visible. I mean, what I think where you need to see it is you need to see it in daily newspapers. You need to see it on the nightly news, the
nightly news
network newscasts. Yeah. You need to see it on local
and even that. I mean, I was Brian Williams. I was excited about for about 20 minutes, and then he started showing up on like 30 Rock and David Letterman and the Daily Show as this sort of buffoonish character, Brian Williams, like this sort of third party, you know, hey, I'm a newsman on NBC, but look what I can also do. I can also wear a funny hat and then I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is, that's my news guy. So now I don't watch him anymore because I can't take him seriously. I can't take any network news seriously anymore. It's just hairdos and personalities. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
And it's, again, it's the profit motive in news that, that is, well, has just bastardized it. And as soon as you remove that, then the whole thing starts to fall apart. This whole Mobius loop falls apart. You remove that element. You remove the element that says, you know what, this newscast has to get high ratings because it has to turn a profit for the network. And you take that out, suddenly everything starts to crumble and you start to get real news again. I mean, you still might get some of the silly bullshit. Because anything needs to be reported. Even a hard newscast, even the wonkiest newscast, should probably do a 30 seconds saying that Anthony Weiner did X, Y, and Z.
Sure.
But you don't need
to. But it doesn't need to be the 24-hour Wiener channel.
Yeah, right. And you don't need to have, like, again, real-world example, CNN the other night with that Republican debate, breaking for commercials, for God's sake, and then and then doing this ridiculousness where they're asking these this or that questions.
Yeah, so, thin like, crust or pan pizza. What the fuck?
And you know why they're doing it? To be stupid and entertaining.
To be folksy, right. Yeah, well, that Gingrich likes pan pizza. I'm going to vote for him.
I mean, we're in the middle of a jobless recovery, and we're spending time on just ridiculous issues from 20 years ago, 30 years ago. We don't need to be talking about it. In this kind of climate, you spend 2 hours talking about the economy and nothing else, because I want to hear these guys whose policy it was that screwed us in the first place. I want to see them wiggle out of that.
Mm-hmm. Those aren't the questions that are being asked.
It's certainly not. We've got
CNN has this they've got the unfathomable situation where you've got all those players, all those major political figures in a line with cameras pointing at them, and they're asking thin crust or pan pizza. What the fuck? What the fuck?
Newt Gingrich, who was in the Speaker of the House in the 90s, the last time that we had, you know, sort of an economic boom, and we had a balanced budget. We could ask him all kinds of things. We're asking him what is his favorite show, American Idol or Dancing with the Stars?
It's worse than that. Before, he was on Meet the Press with that buffoon, David Gregory, and even I, and I'm not a Meet the Press moderator. I'm not a newsman. I'm not a member of the Fourth Estate. He sat there, Newt Gingrich sat there in front of David Gregory and said, talked about the Clinton years and was shitting on, he just made this whole statement that was so completely a lie, was so totally a lie about how he presided as Speaker of the House over the roaring 90s, over this economic recovery. If I was David Gregory, I'd have said, you voted against every Republican in Congress. Every Republican in Congress voted against Bill Clinton's budget, his first budget, which raised taxes. Every single Republican voted against it. Al Gore had to go to the Senate and break the tie and get that passed. And even with that raised taxes across the board, even with it, we had the biggest post-war economic boom ever. And David Gregory let that sail by his pointy head when Newt Gingrich tried to take some fucking credit for that.
Yeah. Well, as bad as David Gregory is, John King is even worse. I mean,
John King is like just a monkey in a suit.
He really is. He's the king of the no follow-ups. Because that's, oh,
and just obviously not. I expect a little wonkery on Meet the Press. That's what it used to be. Go back and watch footage of it from like the 50s and 60s. It was hardcore.
Yeah.
Like doing research for this JFK thing, I've watched tons and tons of 60s era. And Ted Sorensen was on all the time back then, a lot. And they've got it online. And it's like, oh my God, you could write a book about government just from the transcripts of this show.
Yeah.
Unbelievably wonky, and the press was up these people's asses.
Yeah.
And they were just nerds about it, just wonk, massive wonk nerds. And you're like, that's awesome. Listen to what they're talking about.
Yeah, because you know what?
Now it's just, here's my microphone. Please talk into it, politician.
Right. And in those days, every newspaper and just about every network newscast was losing money or on the verge of bankruptcy.
Of course, they were loss leaders
yeah.
for whatever other empire or enterprise owned that. I mean, the news, by definition, was a loss leader. The FCC said, we'll give you this air, but you got to run news.
That's
and
right.
the networks were like, oh, fuck. Yeah. News, can't make any money off of news. And they're mm-hmm. like, yeah, suck it. You've got the rest of the 12-hour day to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
That's why they were like, fuck it, we're not making any money off of this anyway. Might as well get some news out of this. Might as well ask some hard questions. Now Meet the Press is, hi, I'm Newt Gingrich, and I'm going to take a shit. I'm going to take a big dump on your desk, and you're going to film it, and you're going to smile and love it. All we've got is the press to protect us from the fuckholes that we accidentally elect.
Which is why the press is the only industry specifically noted in the Constitution.
Right,
because they have a responsibility for the actual functioning of democracy is dependent upon this. If it wasn't, it wouldn't have been mentioned in the Constitution,
along with assembly and
speech,
speech and our religious freedoms. Press right there at the top,
right.
Numero uno,
exactly.
And they're just shitting all over all of it. Total abdication of their First Amendment responsibilities.
And from all this, I mean, here we have MSNBC that is reporting on the Wiener scandal practically around the clock.
Yeah.
And guess who's sponsoring them around the clock? That ridiculous dancing shadow man for the low testosterone medication. And then the Cialis ads.
It's
like, here we
boner
are.
Pills.
Here we are. Shame on you, Anthony Wiener. And by the way, here's how you can be just like them.
Yeah, go out and get your boner meds.
Take all this shit so you can feel like you're a 17-year-old horn dog again. Oh, my God.
We're all being ruled by the penis medication industry. It's the death of democracy, a hard, hard dick.
I would love to see a study performed on how that is affecting marital fidelity.
Yeah, you got to know these guys, these old women. I mean, it's one thing to have wood when you're 60, but these old 60-year-old women just got worn out vaginas. Yeah. So this guy's got to go somewhere else. These guys got to pretend to be fucking lesbian Syrian bloggers now to get their shit off because they got so much stored up wood.
Oh, my God. On that note, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We'll be back next week at the same time. Take care, everybody.
Double.